You are listening to episode 158 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, Paying for Windows 9.
Welcome to episode 158 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is Rocktober 5th, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my Steve Jobs memorializing brother, James Furlough. But you're muted. Nobody can hear you.
That's right. It's been 3 years, huh?
It's been 3 years. And let's throw a quote out there. I know it's pretty early in the show to just start quoting people, but I think this is one of my all-time favorite quotes in general, but it's, remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool I've ever encountered to help me make big choices in life. Almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you are going to die soon is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. You're already naked. There's no reason to not follow your heart. But
why is that one appropriate?
For, no, I'm kidding. Right. Seems kind of pointless, really. Yeah, you know, we're big enough fanboys on this show. I figured. Tip of the cap. But what are you doing? You're supposed to participate in the show opening. You say something witty here about your life. What's been going on?
So, I've been working a lot. How about you?
Jeez, Louise. That's crazy.
I know.
I actually haven't.
My life has been crazy. Actually, I'm really proud of myself. Here you go. You'll appreciate this. I built a wall today.
Nice.
I totally felt like I was back in Mexico. Yeah, not like an emotional barrier wall, like a physical wall of a building. I've got this unit where there are these two rooms that are next to each other, and it's kind of like a big opening, and it feels like it's just one big room as opposed to two smaller ones. Just makes it for an awkward situation. So anyways, I built this essentially a partition, a wall. It doesn't go up all the way because of the way the lighting works and stuff. I actually want light to flood in into the hallway. So it's kind of just a half wall. That, and if it's a half wall, you get around certain code issues. So I built this wall, and I totally, like, I framed it up and everything. Had wood on the top, on the bottom, you know, studs every 16 inches. I felt like I was in Mexico again, banging boards together.
How many times did you make you use the stud finder and point it at yourself to see if it find the stud?
You know, I didn't have to do that because I was smart enough to mark where everything was ahead of time, so I never had to guess where the studs were.
Okay, well. But that's not, you know, okay.
I know.
You're,
I'm just ignoring
so
the joke.
Clever.
I know. So I built a wall. It was
nice.
Good. A lot more shall I say plum and flush than what we used to make in Mexico.
Hey man, by the time we were like the last couple of years, we were pro. It was nothing but plum and flush when we were doing it. We did all the
offices
and everything. You know.
But it looks really good.
Nice.
My other issue, though, is that if you look behind me, you see this lovely drying rack of clothes.
I do see a lovely drying rack.
So you'll appreciate this. Our dryer broke, stopped working. So we had the brilliant idea of going on the Craigslist and buying a new washer and dryer set, high efficiency, all that fun stuff.
Nice.
I got exactly one load in before the new dryer broke.
Oh, Craigslist, just not as reliable as it used to be.
I don't get it. It worked. And then it doesn't. So now I have two washers, two dryers, two washers that work, zero dryers that work. And thankfully a drying rack that was from my bachelor days when I didn't feel like going to the laundromat.
Right. You know, they claim that the drying rack is better for your clothes than the drying machine.
Yeah, I believe it. But the towels are all crispy and it's not better for my body. So big accomplishment there. Big letdown at the end of the day.
That's unfortunate.
Like, so, yeah.
I had three 12-hour-plus work days this last week, as we were shipping nearly $1.5 million worth of equipment to Singapore on Friday. So that was kind of rough. And then I went to are you familiar with the Sierra Nevada style IPA beer?
I've heard of it, yes.
So it's kind of a popular beer on the Westish coast. There's a microbrew, they're barely a microbrew anymore. It's based in Chico. And as we have some friends who cousins who went to Chico State, it's sort of a thing that every year they have this annual Oktoberfest in October, which is inappropriate. Because it's supposed to be in September. Jeez. Who failed their pre-Georgian calendar history tests? Those guys. Anyways, they have their...
Well, that's because they're busy celebrating Oktoberfest all year round at Chico. Right.
Yeah, so we went to the Oktoberfest and...
You all know it's true. Come on.
No, it's true. It is very true. It's nuttiness. But yeah, so I was up in Chico this weekend and got to do that. It was pretty fun. It was an experience. Especially if you
cool story, Hansel. Right, I mean, Matthew. Right,
exactly. have you ever watched the Family Guy episode where it's the German news show? Yeah, das ist gut. And it's they just listed a bunch of things and say, hey, das ist gut.
Nice.
And and me and our cousin, the whole day, we just like walk around and like, you know, see a cute girl. Ah, yeah, das ist good. Have dinner. How's the food? Ah, das ist good. It's all we could do all day. It was awesome. Quite a bit of fun. Anyways, you know what we're not here to talk about, James? We're not here to talk about drywalls and beer. We're here to talk this week, like every week, about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James got a disclosure he wants to throw our way.
As of today, Sunday, I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions or their subsidiaries / spinoffs that may or may not be happening on Monday, according to the rumor mill.
Yeah, yeah.
So HP's breaking up again.
Is that... Really?
Yeah, the Wall Street Journal, and I even saw it on the news, so it must be true. On TV news.
Wait, who?
While eating dinner.
Yeah, TV news.
By the way, TV news, horribly
terrible.
Depressing.
Terrible?
Horribly
Why
depressing.
Is that?
In general, so I was at another rental, and I was fixing a heater, which turns out it was a circuit breaker, but it was the heater circuit breaker, blah, 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 you don't care. And while I was there fixing it, our resident was, you know, she had the news on. So, you know, I'm listening to it, and it was just like, this horrible thing happened to this poor person. This horrible person did something horrible to this other person. This natural thing was horrible that just happened. Oh, yeah, and while you're at it, you didn't win the lottery. So, you know, you're just like, wow. It was just, and every time I loved it, too, she was like, oh, my gosh, that's horrible. Oh, wow, that's so bad. I'm like, why are you watching this? Horribly depressing. Fill yourself with good things.
There's a radio talk show that I listen to regularly and occasionally mention, but they've pointed out, you know, they like to give the backstory on news media, and they make fun of news all the time. It's pretty funny because, you know, they work with these people and they have the backstory and they like making fun of them. But one of the things that they've said, and this wasn't an original idea from them, it was from somebody else, but as they always say, if you steal from me, you're stealing twice. So I'm about to steal it again. And but basically what it was is that, you know, in news media, we have to talk about, you know, people, the news, they talk about bias in the media. Is it biased to the right? Is it biased to the left? What's the bias in your news source? And they say, yeah, there's some bias left or right, but the true bias of the media in general is towards conflict. Whatever it takes to make sure that there is conflict on your TV screen 100% of the time, that's what they think sells. That's what they're trying to sell you. And so everything you get is disaster and conflict. The world is ending. It's pretty remarkable how terrible it is.
See, that's why tech news is awesome, because It's not always the case.
It's true. There's actually a lot of optimism. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of critics.
Which that should tell them something, given how popular the tech world is and how fervently people follow it. I don't know. That's just, that should say something. So anyways, all that to say, I saw it on the TV news because actually I didn't see it because where my wife was sitting in the restaurant, she goes, "What's going on with HP?" And because they were, you know, they had the symbol up there and we're talking about it. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to break up again. It's going to be great.
I'm going to be totally honest with you. Between working nearly 60 hours this week and then immediately leaving work and driving to Chico and having a few beers all weekend long, I have no clue what you're talking about.
So it was announced, it was leaked this evening. So don't worry.
Okay.
You're not that far
behind. That makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah. But the leak was that it could be announced as early as tomorrow morning. Yeah, which would kind of make sense because HP's fiscal year ends in October. And so it would make sense to announce it now, have a month for people to go, and figure it all out. And then the new fiscal year starts with two new companies. It's a little like spinning off into a separate company, the PC and printers being one, everything else, whatever that is, being another. Meg would stay CEO of that other company, and then a guy named Dion Wessler, who's currently in charge of both the printers and PCs and tablets as well, he would be the CEO of this new company, and Meg would be on chairman of the board of this new company.
So basically what would happen is
we'll see.
Hughesy Packard would split into the consumer hardware division and the
kind of exactly
software.
The plan that the previous CEO had and got fired over.
Yeah,
that's the idea.
Hey, man, sometimes the problem is, you know, a genius is never appreciated in his time. Sometimes being a little too early to the pitch is worse than never coming up with the idea. It's, you know, it's bad news.
Yeah. It's one of those where I actually liked him, Leo Apakather.
Yeah.
And I mean, as you know, re-listen to those podcasts. I talked highly of him. I liked him. I thought he was hilarious for one, which I appreciated and made him fun to listen to. But yeah, there's so much stuff that he said we should do this and we should get into this that we're now doing. And it was like, yeah, that was his idea. He just moved too fast. We weren't ready. There were still scars that had to heal, and he had to fall on the sword. So we'll see if it actually happens. You know, I don't know.
Hey, man, I was on the news.
Yeah, it must be happening. Mm. You know, when the Wall Street Journal, drops a bomb like that, and that's the first place that you see it as opposed to some other – and the way that they said it too – you know, it wasn't like, this would be a good idea if HP did this. They should recommend it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It wasn't one of those. They had all the names and all the titles and all that stuff correct. And I recognized it all and went, oh, geez, someone really is hopeful and gave a lot of details, or, yeah, this is coming down the
pipe. I'm going to say that has the smell of it's technically insider information until the Wall Street Journal leaks it. And then everybody who wants to trade can, you know, wants to, you know, everybody's got their finger on the trade button for the minute the article goes live and they can legally, you know, start trading. And that's the sort of, it has that feel to me, that it's true.
Yeah,
I
agree. We'll find out tomorrow morning. Interesting that it's timed very closely with the PayPal and eBay stuff, but
right?
We'll talk to that. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
Nice tease after we give you all of our contact information. So if you want to follow us throughout the week and when we get, you know, caught blindsided by things like Hewlett Packard or we go to Oktoberfest or we build walls, we post about that sort of stuff.
Or we forget to put on our Fitbits and just dismayed about the fact that all these steps for the day will not be counting.
Right? That's the worst
feeling ever.
You honestly feel like I might as well not even walk. Why do I even try? Like, I don't get any – it doesn't count for anything. Honestly, that is the only downside to the Fitbit, is it's actually a demotivator when I'm not – when I rarely but occasionally do forget it, which reminds me
really.
I need to charge it.
I can't tell you the last time I've forgotten it. But oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm just like, and the worst part, I'm 4 minutes away from home, you know, in the middle of building a wall. And I'm like, I should go home and get it. I'm going up all these stairs and walking around and doing all this exercise and I'm not going to get credit for it. And I'm just like, no, I'm not going to waste the 20 minutes to go and get it because it's stupid Fitbit.
Yeah.
But, oh, man. Oh, I hit it. Anyways, I tweeted about that.
So, yes, if you want to follow us on the Twitter, I am at Matthew D. Furlow on the Twitter. I'm NextWiggin4 on the PlayStation Network and Instagram.
Is Instagram still a thing? Is that still, like, happening?
Yes. Are we concerned that it's not?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like it's reached a point of, I don't know.
That's all right.
I don't want to say irrelevance, but I feel like it's jumped the shark.
Do you feel that way about Snapchat? Because it might be wishful thinking, but I'm kind of get the feeling about that with Snapchat.
Really?
Yeah. I realize that I'm getting really, really old. I'm like...
P.S. At James Furlow, jamesfurlow.com, James Furlow everywhere else.
You.
Okay, go
I
ahead.
Realize that I'm sort of a dinosaur by social media standards, but...
Yeah, I know. You're like, what are you now, 28?
Something like that. Dude, it was funny hanging out with 18-year-olds this weekend, and who think they're really, really cool. And these,
P.S. Have you started watching How to Get Your Mom?
I intended to this week. I got it queued up, but I worked so much this week I didn't have.
Because Matthew, you're describing an episode right now. But go ahead.
But it was pretty amazing getting to hang out with these freshmen who are trying to convince us that they're awesome, that they're really cool. Who are you? Go and actually live a few adventures and then come back to me with cool stories. As opposed to just make your
adventures.
Garbage up. Ugh, guys. I enjoyed it, but I have a lot of friends that don't like 18-year-olds that act like that. But my thing is that the whole the Snapchat, dude, the Snapchats they're still coming. It's still a giant company. It's not over. They're just not coming at the pace that they used to. You know, it used to be I was getting Snapchats every day from a bunch of different people, and I get one or two a day now, and they're usually from the same people who, you know, seem to be kind of overly dedicated to the platform. Now, we'll get into why that
seem a little overly dedicated to the platform. what a great way of putting it.
We'll get into why it may be hopeful thinking a little bit later in the show, but...
All right, tease number two.
Yeah, man, I'm trying to get better at that. They're annoying, but whatever, they make for good shows. You know what it is? It's anticipation. Anticipation is annoying. It's knowing that the birthday presents are coming, but not knowing what they are inside. It's like, why can't you just tell me what the... Why do we have to do the surprise thing? Why do we have to do the surprise?
If I may... It's a form of conflict.
Yeah, you know what? Exactly, and it's compelling entertainment, but it's only because
I was actually, I was reading an article about the about like sales pages on websites, mm-hmm. You know, where they give you the long description, and then you know you got to give up your name and email to find out, you know, to get the PDF download or whatever, you know, all that stuff. And they were talking about like how the psychology behind how all that works, and very fascinating article. I like the psychology behind it. And but one of the things they were talking about is this idea that you want those landing pages to follow your classic story arc, where you have the intro, and then there is some sort of conflict leading to a resolution, but they don't get the resolution until they submit the button. And that's the promise of, you know, you've got some sort of need or want or desire or problem in the world, and this thing that they've got is going to fix it for you, and all you need to do is click, and they will tell you the secrets and the tips and tricks and all that stuff to solve your problem. And they go, and it works.
This is barely germane to the conversation, but I have you been getting any like the political commercials going on in your local areas? Like in
probably, yeah. I don't know.
So
that would require me to watch television.
Well, I don't watch television. I get it on the radio.
That would require me to listen to the radio.
I actually have been getting it on Spotify, to be honest. And because they're getting
that would require me to have Spotify.
Okay, we'll get there. he's number three. But it's really funny listening to them like, you know, it's like Prop 46. Have you heard about Prop 46? Yeah, it's a terrible idea, right? Yeah, Prop 46 is terrible. It's totally being bought by the lawyers, and you know, and this is who's going to benefit, and it's like the unions are evil, and in Prop 46, down with Prop 46, and you get done with like the 32nd spot, and you're like, does anyone want to tell me what Prop 46 is? Or are we just gonna, okay, I guess we'll just go with number 46 is evil, okay. And you know, and it's like, and you can tell it's like, you know, they don't want to tell you what the name of it is, because it's usually some sort of like a, at least like, you know, save the children from diabetes bill.
And, yeah, yeah.
You know,
and, I was thinking Spotted Owl, but yeah, children.
It's just yeah, it's an interesting that whole dilemma of like what information you withhold and what information you give in order to get people like you know, interested, or like make sure they don't, you know, they have like a bad vibe about something, but they don't really know what it is. And I, you know, it's funny. It's like it's working with this whole Prop 46 thing. I'm like, I don't know what it is. I don't have any idea. Probably won't know until a day or two before the election, because I'm an informed citizen. And but I don't know. Whatever. This is not
your radio show. They'll inform you. Don't
worry.
There
we go. Yeah, they always do. Citizen Voice. They're awesome. Okay, so let's talk about Saturday morning cartoons, James, for a minute.
I love Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah, too bad. They're over.
I'm a kid of the 80s. I love them.
They're over. They're done. They're dead.
Cartoon Network. I thought they do cartoons still, don't
they? Well, okay. So Cartoon Network is, yeah.
WB? Come on.
See, that's the thing.
Disney?
See, that's the thing. Disney, Cartoon Network, guy, or Disney, like, those guys, they're moving away from cartoons. Nick doesn't do cartoons anymore.
Really? Yeah, I feel crazy. Like that's what they do.
I know. Well, they do kids shows, is how they kind of view it. And those action shows where kids run around and they're like wizards, or like they just get in trouble with parents all the time. They're too cool for school. Those shows are like completely taken over. And the deal is, obviously, Cartoon Network is a special case because they still do cartoons pretty reliably. The thing is cartoons aren't dead by any means. But especially like the whole like dedicated hour on Saturday morning on your main network, like television, cable stuff, like those things, they're gone. They're just like, they're a thing of the past. And basically what happened was like they say it was a two blow thing. Number one, there were some regulations from the FCC that came in 1996. FCC rule required that stations offer at least 3 hours of educational programming every week. To avoid interrupting affiliate programming, the network scheduled most of their content on Saturday mornings. Thanks a lot. Meanwhile, kids' viewing options have increased dramatically, and this is what I thought was the actual bigger blow. On top of dedicated cable and satellite channels like Cartoon Network, they can now watch plenty of animation on Hulu and Netflix and other streaming services.
Totally true.
Yeah, this is just, it kind of blew my mind, because I was, you know.
But you know what? I'll be honest. Spider-Man offerings on Netflix, not good enough.
A bit lacking. Yeah, but are there other streaming services online? If I were to like say streaming Amazing Spider-Man, could I watch the entire seasons, or you know, the entire show online pretty easily?
I don't know. Probably.
Well, it's almost worth finding. I kind of want to watch Spider-Man now, James.
Dude, there was this one version of Spider-Man. It was like, not the Amazing, it might have been the Amazing Spider-Man. I don't remember. It was a, you know, different version, right? Not the classic one where the guy's like talking to himself all the time and it's hilarious.
Yeah.
But it like goes to another planet or something, and he ends up spending there, and it's kind of like being in a different universe, but you know, just by traveling to another planet. Things where it's like the animals are in control and humans are dirt, and so you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Things are backwards. Anyways, I watched that whole series. It was awesome. I loved it. I was like, dude, Spider-Man cartoons, these are awesome. Not a lot of Batman either. There should be more Batman.
Definitely got you on that one. I'm catching what you're laying down. You know what's crazy about Batman? Yeah. Like pretty much for like the last couple of decades, like with a few exceptions, almost all video game and cartoon versions of the Joker, all voiced by Mark Hamill. Yeah.
Really?
Luke Skywalker is the Joker. Like the
Joker. So he did join the dark side.
all those cartoons. Yeah, pretty crazy. Yeah, pretty much. Actually, yeah. You saw Avatar: The Last Airbender, right? And pretty good.
Amazing. Pretty good is not the way to describe it.
I know, it's one of the greatest cartoons made.
Greatest TV series is up there.
I know. I highly recommend it to anybody who's curious, especially because it's on Netflix. But
just like How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
Maybe not greatest, but pretty darn awesome.
Fire Lord Ozai, though, like numero uno bad guy in the TV series. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mark Hamill.
Man, that guy's made a career in voice acting.
Oh, yeah. That's
sweet.
He's big time, man.
That's sweet.
He got his face all messed up and did his last, before Return of the Jedi, and that was the end of it for his face time.
I'm looking at this picture here, and it's got Spider-Man, it's got the Smurfs, Care Bears, Alvin and the Chipmunks, Captain Planet gang.
Oh man,
dude, I totally remember that.
Yeah,
I feel like there's this other one, but I can't place where he belongs. But Mr. T there,
wait, classic. Who's the other one that you can't place?
I don't know. There's a bear one. Is he a Care Bear? He's got, like, the top hat with the glasses.
I don't know what they are. I can't remember what they are.
No. It's not a Care Bear.
No.
I can't remember. A Gummy Bear, perhaps?
Maybe. That sounds right.
Gummy Bear? Here, right there, Jess. Who's that guy right
Saturday
there?
With the Snorks with Adventures the glasses. Of the Gummy Bear.
That's a Care Bear?
What? Yeah, like no way.
Nah, I don't think so.
I'm looking at the Adventure.
Punky Brewster. She's
Adventures
there.
Adventures of Gummy...
I feel like those are Scooby-Doo people up there.
Y'all should really, check. Yeah, it's definitely the Gummy Bears. Definitely the Gummy Bears. Hard care.
Gummy Bears. All right.
I'm glad we cleared that up. But yeah, it's just crazy to think. You know what's funny?
You know what else, though, is not on Netflix? Tailspin. I want, in the worst way, to watch Tailspin again. I can't. There's, like, a couple random shows on YouTube, and I'll watch them. But that's it.
Yeah.
It's kind of cheesy, but
I'll be honest,
I don't care.
Cartoon Network shows that they're slowly releasing. It's driving me crazy. Adventure Time, I just can't afford it. There are 40 episodes per season, and they still sell for $2 an episode on iTunes. Well, they're 15-minute episodes, and they're amazing. Without question.
I don't think I've ever watched that. Adventure Time?
Oh my gosh. Oh, James. Oh, James.
What is Adventure Time about?
It is one of the greatest shows. Finn the Human, Jake the Dog. It's pretty wonderful. There's two seasons.
Yeah, I have no idea what you're talking
about.
There's
two seasons on Netflix. It's Adventure Time.
Okay, I'm writing it down right now.
It's pretty good.
Because I'm coming into my second to last season of Star Wars, so I'm going to be looking for something new pretty soon here.
What? You started typing. You went mute.
Oh, man. They brought that feature back. The feature was gone for a while. What was I going to say? Oh, I'm at the end of the second to last season of the Star Wars cartoon series, so... Pretty soon here, I'm gonna.
You need something more? Yeah. Adventure Time is a.
Which is a cartoon, by the way.
Yes.
And it's great.
Cool. Yeah, anyways, what I think is really interesting about this is that kids aren't going to think. I mean, you want to talk about the death of network television. Training kids that you can't watch what you want to watch on network TV or, cable TV even, but you should go online and Google search for your favorite TV shows.
More importantly, it's like... I'm sorry, finish that.
It's going to just... it's the end. It might be a generation away, but that's how you end it. Is by ending, you're not getting kids hooked on the idea of showing up every Saturday morning. And maybe they realize that and they're just, whatever, it's, they're seeding it. But, I can't believe they're giving up that territory. I really can't. It's surprising to me.
Well, it's we're looking at this picture here, right? And we recognize 90% of the characters on this picture.
Yes.
And it's the next generation... even maybe our sister is already there. I don't know. I mean, if this happened in 96 and she was born in 90, she's right on that cusp, right, where the transition of it started off. I feel like there will never be a point again where someone will look at this and go, oh, yeah, I know who most of them are.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because you don't have that shared experience anymore. We talk, there's these weird, like, cultural phenomenons where people used to have all of these shared experiences. And that was the whole point of, like, of school, right? We're all going to learn the same things. We're all going to read relatively the same amount of books because there's value in having a shared experience in terms of being a culture and society. And I mean, as stupid as it sounds, I think Saturday morning cartoons is part of that.
No, I think it's an important part about it.
And it's just kind of like, you know, you talk about with we were watching this video of which I thought it was weird that they allowed a video recorder of it, but whatever, of an Amish community building a barn in a day.
Yeah.
And they, like, it's a modern, awesome, humongous barn that they built literally in a day. It's crazy. It would take, you know, a normal construction company like 9 months to build. They did it in a day. And but it's like, that's a shared experience of that community. Oh yeah, we built that barn, you know, and everyone shares it. You talk about that with like the Super Bowl or Oscars or whatever. There's just certain things that people are like, oh yes, I remember that, and we have these shared experiences, and it helps you connect with people. And we're just losing that, which is, I don't know, maybe it's good. It's hard,
you know,
to say.
If I had to choose
20
between
years.
The like the continuation of the nuclear family versus the you know, versus us all watching TV together, I'm going to choose the family. You know, as far as cultural aspects that are going away in America, but yeah, I think it has something to do with it. Sort of just the you know, the breakdown of shared, yeah, like you said, shared cultural experiences and where everybody's on the same page. You know, because, you know, I'm ready to go down a completely different path, and we got a lot to talk about. I was about to get into political theory and why socialism and communism work in different communities and doesn't work in other communities, and that's for our other weekend political talk show.
Now, yeah, and I guess having said all that, since I already had the benefits of you know, having that shared experience, bring on the Netflix,
right?
And, you know, let me watch what I want to watch. That's cool. I mean, when and if I ever have kids, then I can decide what they want to watch and curate it for them, and, you know, cool.
Perfect. I like it.
Cool. Cool. So, I was trying to think of a good transition, and I can't.
That's all right.
So there it is. So I was reading this article, and I had to bring it up because I've been saying this for like at least 4 years now. I know, and before this podcast was a thing.
I've been saying for 10 dang years.
Yes, that's how I felt. There was this. I follow this one blogger named Katie. I can't even say her last name. It's Fehrenbacher. Fehrenbacher. Whatever. She studies follows the clean energy tech space, which I find fascinating. So she covers like Tesla and solar panels and stuff like that. Cool. She works for GigaOhm. Anyways, they had this GigaOhm conference thingy this last week. GigaOhm Connect or something. I don't remember what it's called. But anyways, there was she was coming up with this like this thought where there was this. This rocket scientist and aerospace engineer, Dava Newman, who designed spacesuits that will one day allow astronauts to walk on Mars.
Yeah.
And then he also works with someone called Gui Trotti, and she's an architect and industrial designer. And what was interesting about it is they said that even though they're in two very different fields, they tend to collaborate a ton. And, like, have actually, like, sailed around the world together and done some other cool things. You know, and so the point being, like, what they were saying is that oftentimes big technological breakthroughs come from creative pairs. And at first I thought the article was going to head down the track of, like, it's finding two problems or in semi-unrelated fields and, you know, somehow combining those together. Like, I know, I'll tell people when they're studying for school and they're like, I don't know what to study, or you know, they're looking for a job or whatever, I'll be like, well, give me a couple things that you're interested in. Like, what did you study and what are you interested in? And hopefully they're not the same thing. Hopefully they're different, because that's where the interesting things come in. Like, for example, I've talked to people where they're like, oh, I'm really into English and I'm a computer programmer. Mm. Like, ah, interesting creative combination. What could you do that, you know, what could you do in the software engineering space that somehow brings the, you know, the English lit part out and gives you a competitive advantage? So we'll have those types of conversations. The article did not go there. Cool. Whatever. That's fine. I'm okay to be surprised. Instead, it was saying that these creative pairs are people who oftentimes big tech breakthroughs come together when two people with different skill sets are able to support each other and come up with something amazing. They started to give all sorts of examples. Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, right? Two very different people came together, created something great. The two Google founders, Larry Page and Sergey Brin, they start to stretch a little bit, and it's like Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg. Apparently, like John Lennon, Paul McCartney, I guess they did some, but they did music or something. I'm kidding. Kidding. I just want to put that out there. I know what they did. They did country music. Come on.
I cried.
Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David. Who the heck is Larry David, by the way?
Are you serious?
Very serious.
Oh, my gosh. You've got to watch Curb Your Enthusiasm. Larry David is basically who they modeled George Costanza off of. Like, his life is actually George Costanza, and the two of them created the show and then got what's his name to play George Costanza. And then later on, Larry David went to create a show called Curb Your Enthusiasm, where he stars as, like, in his life. And it's the same weird, twisted sense of, like, humor, but it's like, it's a little bit rougher around the edges, because it's I think it's a cable show as opposed to being, but it's pretty funny, especially if you were into the whole Seinfeld thing and that sense of humor and their kind of just weird obsessions and observations about the world, you know. But
fair enough.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Good to know. Good to know. So there's one combination. Another one, again, Steve Jobs with Johnny Ive.
Yeah, now and
which, by the way, Vogue magazine did a pretty good article on him.
They did
this week too.
What about the new Mark Newson addition to the creative team?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, not excited about it. I've been following.
Hasn't done anything to prove me. Prove it should be exciting. What? Yet.
I mean,
what?
Other than the rest of his career? Okay, fair enough. Whatever.
Yeah. Well, whatever. You know. They also said it was interesting that that Nest CEO Tony Fadell, you know, he says one of the reasons why he went to Google was that he was looking for his next mentor.
Yeah.
Because he had one with Steve Jobs, and he was like, I want another one. Which, by the way, my wife and I had a couple very long conversations. My Nest is currently in transit.
Nice. Congratulations. It's awesome.
Yeah. We were like, what the heck? We were like, what the heck? You know, let's just do it,
man. YOLO.
Yeah. So then I've my Lockatron, they just finished like number 10,000 on the list, and I'm like 21,000 or something ridiculous like that. They still claim November. We'll see. Not holding my breath for that one.
That seems like a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, being that it took them like a year to get to 10,000. So yeah, there's that. But eventually, connected home, here it comes. So anyways, the point being that there's, you know, oftentimes you'll see pretty cool breakthroughs when you have two people who are supporting each other with different skills. And that's where I say, like, yeah, and the ultimate awesome example of all that was Disney.
Right.
Where he had two brothers with varying, you know, skill sets. One of them massively creative, the other one into numbers and finance. Worked out okay for them.
I was sort of hoping you were going to go with the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast example, but, you know.
Yes, there's that too.
Whatever.
There's that too. I'm not quite brash enough to say that we've changed the world yet. I'll leave that caveat there. But But yeah, anyways, I was just like, yes, yes, that's something that I've been saying and have pointed out and firmly, totally, 100% agreeing. So cool. Thanks, Katie, for agreeing with me.
Hey, man, it's awesome. It's good to know. Cool. So speaking of creative pairs and tough breakups, as of this week, PayPal and eBay are going Splitsville.
That's right.
So one thing I want to mention here is I've obviously talked quite a bit about I'm not sure if anybody has noticed, but I'm kind of into Elon Musk and his whole deal. But I was just like, kind of with all this PayPal stuff, I suddenly put together, I did not realize that Peter Thiel was one of the other three on the whole PayPal deal and what happened there. Because, you know, it's like, it's funny. Peter Thiel's a nutcase and he's kind of fun from that perspective. But he's a...
kind of a nutcase.
Yeah, it's kind of a nutcase. And a very successful nutcase, so can you hold it against him? Not for long. But, yeah, I just thought that was really – that was interesting. So anyway, so this is the deal. PayPal, eBay are they're going to be spinning off the two companies from each other. PayPal obviously does digital payments over the internet, and eBay does, you know, their whole – thing that they do, and it seems like there's a couple of different aspects to this deal and why it happened. Number one, what's his name? Oh, geez, oh man, I gotta find it. The guy, he's the investor. They call him the activist investor.
Carl
Icahn. There we go. Who tried to get?
Dude, I just pulled that one out of the air.
I was pretty good, and I'm.
There's only like two or three of them.
That's true. Carl Icahn, he's been a thorn in the side of a couple of different big companies.
Yep.
Made a pretty big investment into eBay a while back, and basically was saying, "Hey, I think PayPal's got potential. Y'all should spin off the company and make some more money." And eBay came back and was like, "No, we're not going to do that, you idiot." A lot of people at this point just fight to Carl Icahn because if you give him too much mind to share, like, he's got the ability to push ideas that are way further than his financial stake in a company. And if you give him, let him build a little momentum, he can take it completely under your company. It's crazy what he's capable of doing if he gets gets a head of steam going. And so I think a lot of times companies, even if it's a good idea or has some sort of a founding, they'll resist it for a long time just so that he doesn't get credit for it. So they totally were like, "No, we're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. We're not going to do it." And finally, like, now that he's like let off the pressure, guess what? They're doing it. Yeah, basically, they're seeing this new space open up for for NFC payments and stuff, and getting off our addiction to plastic and getting on to silicon, they want a piece of that pie. It was kind of big news back when Apple announced Apple Pay a couple weeks ago that PayPal was not part of their preferred. Preferred provider list, and Apple went out of its way to list everybody who was on that list, and so PayPal getting not on that list was a pretty major oversight. And we talked about why that might be a couple weeks ago, but as time goes on, more and more details kind of trickle out, and it sounds like one of the big deals there was PayPal made a deal with our good friends over in Korea, Samsung, to do their NFC digital wallet thing and kind of be one of the back-end pieces of that. At the same time, they were in negotiations with Apple and about Apple Pay, and Tim Cook did not take that kindly. He was unpleased. And so they basically, at that point, were like, "Go away, we hate you." And yeah, and that was it. That was the end of that whole deal. And now it's PayPal's kind of left out in the cold to fight for their own. I mean, they you know, obviously they've got some success going on, so they've got something to, they got a couple of plays left that they can execute on.
Yeah, like what?
Oh, I don't know. Die slowly over
that's
time.
The problem. It's like, all right, you already got eBay as your biggest partner, which sounds like you may potentially now lose them, or at least have to start to pay for that privilege.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The problem that PayPal has some,
clock is ticking, PayPal.
Fold. Yeah. This is a deal, man. Because it's like, because eBay was such a powerful moneymaker. It was really a subsidiary. I mean, it was a subsidiary of eBay. In the truest sense of the word, it was the back end of the payment system for eBay, and they thought, yeah, it could be more, which was its own product, but ultimately it survived on the back of, you know, as the back end of eBay. And the problem is that eBay's kind of petered out. It's not really growing at all. It's not doing its whole thing. It is what it is, and it doesn't have this aggressive growth anymore. And so because it was so...
That's because Meg's busy delivering aggressive growth for HP right now.
Boom.
Never mind.
You know, she's, hey, man, sometimes, hey, what did I say?
The problem is the company is too big. What they really should do is split it off into two separate companies. I think this is a brilliant idea, and they should listen to me.
Yes, there we go. And please don't fire me.
Yes, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Right. And so this is I actually agree with you. And it's funny. I agree with you for like the – sometimes what I like to do is I like to just go with my gut and come up with stupid – like some – you know, sometimes you just got to have like a feeling about why something's happening.
Yeah.
And you can break down that feeling, but what the trick is that I have a sentiment. And if my sentiment is widely held, it doesn't really matter what the other reasons are, if that sentiment will be the driving force behind things. Because we kind of like, just in general, whether it's politics or technology or purchases or relationships or whatever, we get caught up in the momentum of sentiment. And there's a certain sentiment that goes along with PayPal. And I think you're, you know, really kind of hitting it on the head, which is, where does PayPal have to go? What's their whole deal? Like, when you look at the whole PayPal little triangle thing that competes directly with Square, and they didn't make it a Square because, well, you know, Square, it's in the name. and they had to come up with this stupid card reader as a direct competitor. And it's funny, you know, we went to Oktoberfest, and this mentioned, and when we went in, this is so annoying. They were like doing all the sales on iPads and stuff, and they had a cash only line. And I happened to have cash. I was like, yeah, that's right, I'm going to get in there faster. All the rest of the lines were credit card only. They're all using PayPal to do the whole thing. Those lines went faster than my line. I was so angry. I was like, I can't believe it, man. The scale has tipped thanks to Square. It is now faster to just swipe your card and pay cash. And I had exact change. It was craziness. But the point in this is that it's
wait, like, but they were using, you know, Square or PayPal readers?
They were using Square, and that was the point, is that,
okay,
hey, this technology has legs.
I wasn't sure I wasn't sure what you said there, but okay.
Gotcha. This technology has legs. It's going someplace, and it's not going there with PayPal. That's not people's go-to. You know, sometimes you get big events, like I mentioned, Outside Lands has partnered with PayPal a couple times, so they use PayPal as their, like, you know, microtransaction thing. But the deal there is, like, they pay for that privilege. It's a giant thing, and they're trying to, you know, left to our own devices, people jump on Square every time. And it's just like, you know, that's the way of the future. It's quite, you know, it's crazy. There are other competitors, but it's like Square is the one that if you have to pay for yourself, you're going to go with Square. I got the Square card reader. It's in the name. Once again, it's like, what ridiculous reasons why sentiment work. It's stupid, but that name thing has something to do with it. PayPal, they got a bad rap as being the, you know, when you get ripped off on eBay, PayPal is the one that delivers the bad news. Because it's like, you ship something on, you know, all the horror stories where you're selling your $1,500 engagement ring, and you're only getting 500 bones for it to begin with, and you ship it internationally, and when it gets there, they claim, oh, I didn't get the ring, and then all of a sudden, it gets paid, you know, bumped back. This started out as a autobiographical story, but quickly become apocryphal. I never actually shipped the ring.
I was going to say, are we going to hear this story finally?
But and I didn't, because they really, really wanted to go through PayPal. And the deal is that, yeah, you'll transfer the money to you and you've got the money in your bank account and you can feel free to spend that money. But if there's an issue and they claim, hey, we didn't do it, and they revoke the payment, you know, the receiver revokes the payment because they claim they didn't get the ring, then PayPal pulls the money from your account and you have to prove that. You know, and it's like immediately the money's gone. And if you can't prove that there's guarantees that, like, if you do everything exactly according, like, you everything's perfect, all the ducks are in a row, they'll let you know, they'll give you the money. They'll take the hit. But if anything's out of line, if you didn't ship it to the address that you said you were going to ship it to, like they ask you to ship it to a different desk address or whatever, like, if there's any misrepresentation, you take the hit as the seller. And my deal with this one was that they wanted me to ship it to a different location than we had previously agreed, and they wanted me to put onto the shipping information that it was, you know, a different thing. And I came in and said, look, I'm willing to use a different payment service other than PayPal because of the X, Y, and Z, and they refuse. They're like, no, we got to use PayPal. That's what we do. And I just tried and assured myself and said, then you're not going to get what you think you bought because you're not paying for it that way. So, but that's why. I mean, and PayPal's got a rap for that whole thing. Is that their fault? No, not really. It's eBay's fault. It's how eBay deals with those transactions. But PayPal's the bearer of bad news, you know? And I think you've really got to this point that there's kind of a sentiment. And what I think is really interesting is I was Bloomberg had an article where they talk about kids aren't into PayPal as Apple rules mobile pay buzz tech. And it was just this article that talks kind of about, like, the, you know, buzz and mind share and that sort of thing. And they're basically like, yeah, PayPal's not the thing that all the kids are excited about. You know, PayPal has a strong market and they do what they do well, and there are a lot of people who use them. But Ariel Gruen, a 22-year-old student in the University of Maryland, who says PayPal is outdated already. And you're like, it's so stupid, because so many of these things, it's like all that should matter is who is the most secure, you know, transaction at the cheapest price. That's all that should matter in something like this. It's a utility. And who's most secure, who's cheapest. But that's not how this works. It's not what the game is. It's their sentiment plays so much into it, especially when you're trying to become the de facto standard. And PayPal's now going to come in a backdoor. They're not going to be a direct, you know, Apple Pay is going to come in like a wrecking ball into this thing. And if you can't play with Apple, you're not going to be able to play, period. And you know, how the other hardware companies are going to get around it is they're just going to jump onto the NFC standard that Apple's on, and those NFC readers are just going to have to be compatible with whoever's sending information to them, you know? And everybody else will have to handle it on the back end. But if PayPal, you know, as far as the financial institutions go, Apple's like, if you're not in with Apple, you're not in. Like, you're going to have a really hard time making that work. And I think, yeah, they got a bad position, because like the two obvious forward directions there's three directions we're going, right? There's the Apple Pay, which is replacing the credit card with the phone, and sort of like the whole electronic service, that information stored in the phone, and you can use your phone as sort of the center of your financial transactions. Then there's the whole like micropayments between friends, sort of getting off of the whole, you know, not using credit cards really necessarily. And that's Square Cash is an example of it. What's the one that you like, the other one, Duolingo?
Duala.
Duolingo is a language learning service. Duala, you know, things like that, things of that nature are direct competitors with a lot of what PayPal does. And then, except better, because you don't have to, because they're not stupid. And then
See, and that's what they're fighting right there.
And then it is. It totally is. And then there's, and then the final thing is the what, you know, as we move on to these two purely mobile versions of transactions, whether you're transactioning over, you know, microtransactions just between friends, or if you're doing, you know, payment system using your phone and NFC, as we transition to those, you'll have like the legacy of card readers and stuff. And that is all, you know, it's a Square just wipes up the floor with that kind of thing, you know? Is it going to last forever for them? No. Is that unfortunate? Yes. Is it going to be a really good market for quite a while? Totally. And PayPal has, you know, they just don't have the mind share. You know, people aren't paying for it unless they're being paid to do it. And, you know, and not to mention the fact that, you know, Amazon is stepping into the ring in a big way on this. And, you know, and with their whole, like, you know, their whole payment plan and how they are, like, you know, a major back end on the internet, you know, click, you know, a single click and you can do all your payments. There is so much competition from such heavyweights. They're just, it seems like there should be a lot of room to go, but there's a lot of people that are growing. And unless you come up with something really creative to sort of like come in from the side, and unfortunately at this point, because it's a utility, your only two options are to be more secure or to be cheaper. And it's hard for them to do more secure than a fingerprint scanner, and it's harder for them to do cheaper than the heavyweights like Amazon, who are willing to take the hit as long as it takes to knock you out of the round, you know, to suffocate you under the weight of their monopoly. It's a rough place to be for a company.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to stay around. They're not going to go anywhere, but they're not going to do anything noteworthy either.
Well, but they're not going to die. Well, I see, but this is my question. Yeah. What's going to, like you said, what's going to keep them around? What's to stop them to now have to play fairly with Amazon payment solutions or Apple payment solutions as the, you know, for eBay? That's like what keeps them around. At the moment that, you know, eBay decides.
There's no way. No way eBay is going to switch to someone else.
Do you have to switch to somebody else, or can you just make somebody else an option? You know, allow there to be a little competition. You know, and or I should more.
No, because it's still going to be. Isn't it going to be owned by eBay or something like that, or somewhere in there?
No.
Nah, no, no way. eBay's not going to switch.
Okay. Well, all right. And there's two more thoughts that sort of kept circulating around this whole thing that I wanted to throw in there. Number one, Bill Gates said that Apple Pay is a real contribution. Basically, he's like giving it the old thumbs up of the technology, which is
this. Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I think he's sort of to the point where he's stupid rich and his money, you know, like. I think he more and more kind of views himself less as Microsoft and more as tech luminary and, you know, savior of humanity.
More like a Steve Woz role.
Yeah, really though. You know, and, yeah, because we got Woz. Oh, jeez. You know, and I think it's interesting. I think it's cool that he basically, you know, obviously what I think was the most interesting part about that was that when he said, you know, when he said, you know, it was a real contribution, he said, and as these different solutions start working out, they're really going to drive it. This is going to be a new standard as Android and Windows kind of move forward. And you're like, dude, you just kind of, you threw Android a bone there. Like, that was an acknowledgement of the fact that, yes, the biggest platform in the world. Like, okay, let's rock and roll. Like, That was mature, not quite the Steve Ballmer esque. Get rid of all your iPads on the side court and switch over to Surface Pro 3 as soon as you can. It's
what an idiot.
Yeah,
I just whatever.
Dude, it's just
blind. You got to have that blind loyalty be a sports owner.
I know,
so that's fine.
It's crazy. On one hand, it's funny. Because he's not leading Microsoft anymore, I actually enjoy that sort of thing. Because, like you said, it's just fully into the you're wearing. It's my jersey. This is the jersey. All that matters is the jersey. It's my team. It's my game. It's my, you know, it is my army defending my country. Like, he's a he is a patriot till the end. And, you know, yeah, I hand it to him. Hey, whatever. You know, it's cool. If it's not going to stop them from winning games, then fine. It's whatever.
Wow, we'll see.
I know, right? Yeah, talk to the NFL about that. I love the fact that they still call them iPads from the commentator booth.
I know.
Their services. And that's got to drive them absolutely insane. But
just goes to show there's some things you can't buy.
It's true. And
I've got a friend. It was so funny. They have a Kindle Fire that they have their kid play with, and you know, whatever. And we hadn't seen him all summer, and we were finally started to hang out again. Now the fall's here, and they're like, "Oh yeah, go get your iPad and go hang out on it." And I was like, "Oh, you got him an iPad? You upgraded?" They're like, "No, but he likes it more if we call it an iPad."
Oh my gosh, it's hilarious. Oh jeez. Oh my gosh.
I know. I was like, "Oh man."
That's super funny.
So I was like, "Sweet."
And Santa Claus is real. Man, that's gonna crush him one day.
or he'll be like, "Wait, this isn't an iPad. There's something better."
Yeah. This is the new iPad Air 3. Super exciting.
Yeah.
Enjoy. Yeah, it's a completely different operating system. Don't worry about it. And the last thought about this is sort of like, oh, this is something that I'm personally going to pay attention to because I like boring things, evidently. But they were talking about like why banks aren't freaking out about what's going on right now and kind of like what the deal is and how is it possible that Apple can become a complete gatekeeper to this sort of thing and yet no banks are tripping. And this dude, what is his name? Man, I'm not nailing it on the names today. Probably because his name's like impossible to pronounce. It's Christoph Yuryev, but he's the vice president of Gartner. And basically, what his deal was, like, what Apple's doing right now is they're just wherever there's a bank, you know, whatever location they want to go into, they just say, "Who's the biggest bank here? Who's willing to play ball with us? You pay for the right to use our platform, and whoever's willing to pay the top dollar is the winner, and that's the one who's going to win." And he basically is like, they're saying, why is it that banks are going along with this? Well, it's because probably what's going to happen in the next couple of years is as the technology really starts to gain some momentum, the banks are going to pay unbelievable amounts of money to regulators around the world to get this completely regulated. And what you'll probably see is just sort of a lot of it'll have parallels to net neutrality, but these are all going to, everything is going to become kind of pipes to it all, and you might, you're different how you actually do the transaction, what technology you're using for different, you know, is going to be different on the back end, but there are going to be certain standards, and the banks are all going to sort of become these pipes from a regulated perspective, and governments around the world are just going to have to get on top of this, because, you know, the obvious like problem here is that if Apple becomes super dominant and they are a major, you know, industry setter, they can pick winners and losers, which, you know, sure, banks may not have as much money as Apple, but they got a lot of money still. And they're not going to be super thrilled with that sort of a thing. And they can buy laws, and they will. And so that'll be interesting to watch. I probably will never talk about it on the show unless something really crazy happens, because I realize it's pretty boring to most people. Why would you care? I don't know why I do. Anyways, yeah, PayPal. It's going to be a rough road to ruin, right? Long road to ruin. So, good luck. Bon voyage. But it wasn't the only big announcement this week. There's one other.
No. Microsoft.
Speaking of Bill Gates.
They came out with, let's see here. They just finished with Windows 8, and they're getting ready for a new version of Windows, which will be the 11th version of Windows. So naturally, they name it Windows 10.
Yeah.
Which overshadows everything else about Windows, because we all got distracted by the fact that it's not Windows 9.
Yeah.
Or even Windows 11. That would have made sense.
That would have made sense. But now it's a direct competitor with OS X. or OS.
Amazing. Yeah. So there's been a whole lot of theories, hypotheses, musings as to why they named it Windows 10. The official stance so far is that it's just so amazing it deserved more than one number up.
Sure.
That's what they said. Oh, it's amazing. So Windows 7 was the great undoing of Vista, to bring it more back to like Windows XP, which was like Windows 98.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, was an undoing of like Windows 2000 or ME or something like that. They've had Windows 8, and now they are claiming that Windows 10 will be the great undoing of Windows 8, essentially bringing us back to the Windows 98 XP era.
Yeah.
If you think about it. Apparently people like Windows the way it is. Quit messing with it, Microsoft. You can lay a bunch of people off. You're working too hard.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, actually. My favorite explanation for why they called it Windows 10 is because Windows 7, 8, 9... And you get it? It's a childish joke.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. There we go. It's the classic why is 10 afraid of 7? Because 7, 8, 9. But the real reason is, if you type in Windows 9 into Google, it auto-completes to Windows 98 or 95. I think...
Well, not just Google, but, I mean, what they were saying is actually it's a whole bunch of developers who wrote software back in, like, 98 and 95, for that matter. Their what-if statements were just, like, Windows 9.
Yeah.
It was, like, 9X, essentially. To cover all of those different versions of Windows for the years. And that's the one I think is actually the most plausible one. Is it just like, it stops them from having a bazillion different errors that would just like, ugh.
Yeah. Legacy code that they probably baked deep into their own, you know, kernel. And it just, that seems like the most obvious.
Which is part of me, it's like, if that's the answer, just say that. Don't say, because it's two times better than the last one. Come on. Fire your PR people. We enjoy honesty and the backstory.
It's true.
And we want your... I mean, think about the story, right? We all know that you have these older software that's running, and we want it to continue to run and continue to be valuable so you don't have to go out and buy all new everything. Therefore, we're naming it 10 to avoid this problem with the 9. You're welcome.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a fantastic story. Tell that.
Yeah, I don't know. They've not been doing great with their old naming conventions lately, though. I mean, come on. Xbox One, that's still a stupid name. Like, I mean, we sucked it up and we're just dealing with it. But it's not a good name. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Well, what are you talking about? But it's a deal.
It's the one final one you need until the next one.
I realize that's exactly what the explanation was, and it's still really stupid.
Well, it's a similar deal. You're just like, come on.
Yeah, stay with the, like, just stick with them.
Satya, what are you doing, man?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Really?
Yeah, that was I don't know. He's been around long enough where that decision was probably already made, is that you know, for him. I'm willing to buy that.
I feel like had it been Steve Jobs running this company.
Oh. If I think he had plenty of time.
He goes, yeah, I guess we're not going to release it, huh? Fix the name.
Yeah. I was going to say,
come on.
My thought is they.
Plus,
you know,
he would not have been traveling, but that's a different issue.
This whole thing's a mess. The problem is, I think Sasha probably rightly thinks, you know, Windows is, you know, it's not the future of the company. It's going the way of the dinosaur. And I think he doesn't care as much as maybe his investors would like him to.
I think he should care a whole lot about it, in my opinion.
I think he should too. I think it's rather important, but you know, he thinks the future is web services, and I think he's right in a general.
That's great. How do we get to those web services?
Yeah, I was gonna say I think he's right in a general sense. I think he's a little bit foolish if he thinks that, you know, if he moves too quickly in forgetting, you know, why we're there in the first place. But yeah, it's an interesting deal. Why would you call it Windows 10? I don't know. Why not Windows 11? Especially with the whole, like, come on, nobody thought about the whole OS X thing. You know, it's funny. I get why you wouldn't call it Windows 9. I actually completely get why you wouldn't call it Windows 9. But calling it, deciding to call it Windows 10 was particularly ballsy. But okay, so to actually move away from just talk about names and stuff, because as fun as that is, they launched an entire operating system this week, not just the name of it. So number one,
are you downloading the technical preview?
I don't have a really functioning copy of Windows 8. I actually have a functioning copy of Windows 8 that runs on Parallels, but on my Mac. But I never paid for Parallels, so you know, functioning in finger quotes. And I didn't want to partition my hard drive, so it is what it is. When I use Windows on my laptop, it's Windows 7 still, like everybody, you know, else. But they did, yeah, they launched the technical preview this week, and you can try it out, see if you like it. And obviously the big caveat is that there's still a lot of movement, man. It's early, it's not a beta, it's a technical preview. It's a, hey, this is to sort of let you, let you know that this is the direction we're moving. And big thing is everybody kind of likes it. It's cool. One of the big ideas here is, you know, they've made...
Which they should. I mean, that's how that works. Yeah. So
one of the big ideas that is going on in this thing is that, you know, they're making UI changes to try to kind of make people happy. Number one, they're trying to figure out their whole interface thing. Now, because there's a big difference between a touch GUI and a mouse based GUI, and how you deal with that is difficult, and you know, it's not super straightforward. Just ask Microsoft. And they've made some UI changes to try to deal with that. Number one. Number two, they brought back the start menu. Woo! And and basically the start menu opens up a small window with a bunch of live tiles in it, which I think it was bad UI language why the whole start menu in Windows 8 didn't work. I think the idea of the main homepage being, you know, having live tiles and kind of bringing you over places makes sense, and that's basically, it's just the start menu. And they've changed the UI language slightly so that...
I don't understand. Why not have the main desktop with the tiles on that? And then you got a quick way to hide them or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Why not have icons be live tiles sort of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not? I mean, that seems like such an obvious thing to do. You can buy add-on, or you can download for free add-ons on the Windows that does that for you.
Yeah.
I've played with them. They're kind of cool. Why not just embrace that? Why does it have to be in the start menu? I guess I don't.
So this is the deal. I think it makes total sense. I think it makes total sense, James. Basically, what happened is they built two operating systems, one for mobile devices and one for desktops. And then they said, we can't sell two different we can't try to push two majorly different,
we don't want to.
Well, we don't want to push two majorly different operating systems from a UI perspective at the same time, even if they run the same back end. So we're going to turn them into the same thing, and hence gives birth to the unholy disaster that was Windows 8. And now all they want super desperately is to try to not upset people more. And people keep saying, we want a start menu. So even if there was a better solution, and this one you're suggesting is probably a perfect example.
I'm saying keep the start menu. Yeah. I do them both.
But they've got no courage to be adventurous right now, man. They've got they want the UI to be completely, we talk about it every time there's a new operating system that comes out. I make the same argument. It's not that it's unintuitive. It's that there's a difference between unfamiliar and unintuitive. And Microsoft takes a lot of lumps for changing things and having to be unintuitive or unfamiliar, and people claiming it's unintuitive, which it's not. It's just different, and you're not used to it yet. Get used to it, and it makes sense. It becomes intuitive.
Like the ribbons.
Yeah. And the thing is like right now they just want it to be familiar. Doesn't matter if it's intuitive or not. As long as it's familiar, that's good enough. And I think you're going to have they're just going to run down that line, and, you know, as far as they can. They want the desktop to feel like a desktop. What's kind of actually cool about this operating system is, you know, I've been talking about this for a while, and I'm a fan of the .NET platform in principle. I don't do much programming in it, but I like what it is as an idea, where it's you create a virtual machine that's deeply integrated with your operating system, all of your operating systems, and so all of your software kind of runs, no matter what operating system you have, whether it's Windows Phone 8, Windows 8, Windows 7, whatever, they all have this same .NET framework that sort of runs in between the operating system and your program. And so you can create one compilation of program of code, and it'll run on any one of your different operating systems. At the same time, the .NET compiler is capable of taking a bunch of different languages and compiling it into the same, you know, actual code. And so you have this basically becomes this link in the two chains. So it doesn't matter what language you program it in, it doesn't matter what operating system you're running on, it runs the same as long as it's, you know, within Microsoft's little sphere of influence, which is a pretty big sphere of influence, so it's cool. It's a good idea, and they've been working really, really hard to get it there. Well, Windows 10 is really the big deal about it, is a major step in a unified operating system that will run anywhere, anytime, and really, you know, takes the .NET platform to a fully fledged level. And so the idea is that Windows 10 will run the same operating system, the same apps, everything will run, whether it's on a phone, a tablet, or a full-blown, you know, laptop, desktop. It is truly scalable, and the UI elements will intelligently shift based on what hardware you're on. Is it a small form tablet with a keyboard? Well, then it'll be, you know, it'll act like a laptop. You pull that keyboard off, and all of a sudden it acts like a tablet. You get it onto a super tiny phone, size screen, and all of a sudden it'll act like a phone. You put it on a big old desktop with a giant screen, and it'll act like, you know, whatever. And, you know, they really want to create this scalable operating system, which it's funny. I mean, like there was an article I was reading, they even bring up the idea that, you know, back in the day when they launched the iOS, they talked about how, you know, iPhone OS, when they were calling it that, was basically, it's basically OS X, just like pared down a little bit. It runs the same kernel and everything, which, you know, was supposed to give this idea that code that runs on OS X would also run on the iPhone, which is true insofar as, like, kind of. If you build, like, a bunch of back-end code for doing certain types of operations in Cocoa or C, yeah, it'll run the same on both. But for, like, UI stuff, it's completely different. And it's a completely different operating system, let's be real. Like, it's not even – it's the same family in the same sense that Windows 95 and Windows 7 are the same family, but they're not exactly the same. And whereas this is like, this is a real move in the idea of having it be, no, they're all the same. They all run the same. They all run the same code. They execute, you know. And if they pull it off, which I think, you know, I think what their big goal here is to really try to pull it off in the middle realm, tablets and laptops. You know, I actually think the edge cases of phones and computers are probably going to be, you know, full-size desktops are going to be a little more ignored in this case. And I think phones are going to suffer the most, honestly, because you're talking about some pretty powerful capabilities. It's a lot of code. There's a lot of horsepower that's required. And that's not exactly something that the Windows phones are known for, is having a lot of horsepower. And it'll be interesting to see how well it performs when it's on the, you know, the phone form factor of their world.
Yeah, I agree. It sounds like we'll find that out in January when they release the consumer preview.
Yeah. January? When's it? When they actually? When did they say when they're launching it? Launching it? What their goal is?
They might have. I didn't see it anywhere.
Okay, we'll figure it out when it comes, I'm sure.
Next summer.
Yeah. The future, in short.
The future. Yeah. It's coming. I'm still stuck on the name.
Yeah, well, I don't blame you. I tried to turn that into an intelligent or, you know, a deeper conversation, but it's a stupid name. I don't know what they're doing.
That's the problem, man. It's just they're going to fight that. You know, who wants to have that intelligent conversation when every single question is, why Windows 10?
Yeah. You know, it's not the perfectly run company. I'll give you that much.
Yeah,
it does. It drives me nuts.
Speaking of companies that are not perfectly run, yeah. Let's talk about Snapchat.
Oh, man. They're just not good at what they do. That's literally what my note says. It's if you guys had access to our listeners, if you guys had access to our page notes, it says that, doesn't it? It's right there. They're just not good at what they do. It's so true. A company drives me crazy because so basically what's going on is they released a bunch of they got hacked. A bunch of different accounts got hacked a while back. And nothing really came from it. And finally something has come from it, and basically people are getting Snapchats from their friends or who they think are friends, but they're hacked accounts. And it's sending spam to friends basically saying, hey, you're fat. Which is not nice. That is not kind.
That is so awesome.
Yeah.
I love spammers.
I know. They just, hey, man.
It's like, do you want them to click on your link or not?
Yeah.
I don't get it. Like, what's the end goal here behind a spammer? I thought it would be to click on the link. If so, you gotta do better than that.
No, man, it's kind of a brilliant idea. It's they come up with these. It's a self-sorting system. You come up with only idiots would click on this link, and only idiots will buy our thing. So, you know, it just basically you're not going to waste your time on the 98% of people who aren't going to pay money anyways. Oh, it works.
I feel like it could be so much better. I want to, like, this is going to sound horrible, like, get into the spamming business to prove this could be done better.
I'll do it, man. It's worth a lot of money.
Apparently. I just, like, just click ads. You know what I mean? You know, people come visit your page. You get paid half a penny because you have an ad on the page.
Yeah.
All I would do is I would aggregate, like, I don't know, not that many, like half a dozen, like, cartoons or jokes or something like that. They don't even have to be good. It doesn't even matter. But then it'd be like, hey, saw this funny cartoon, thought you'd like it. Boom. Link. Done.
Yeah.
Billions and billions of dollars my
rich.
Way.
And question mark, question mark, question mark.
For more cartoons like this, subscribe here. Enter your email. Oh my gosh, it's brilliant.
It's brilliant. It's actually not a bad idea. finally, our get-rich-quick scheme.
Yes. That's because we're a duo, creative thinkers.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. So my thing with Snapchat is like it's.
And again, the crux behind this brilliant idea is hacking accounts.
Yes.
And sending those messages, not depending on the internet doing its viral thing, but like forcing
it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I just wanted to clarify that that's how this works.
It is how it works. What I like botnets. I'm kind of a fan of the whole idea, and I don't have any contacts with the Russian mafia.
But it's like this crazy idea of what if you spammed with something useful?
It actually is funny.
I'm just throwing that out there. It's a form of illegal advertising. Anyways.
Fairly illegal. It's useful.
It's only if you get caught.
Right. One of the things I hate about Snapchat is that, you know, they pose themselves as this, like, you know, as a secure way to send naked pictures to your boyfriend, and because the pictures got self-deleted after a short period of time. And
or not.
Yeah, and the problem is that the ephemeral website or service is anything but that. They are incredibly insecure, and they just don't care at all about what their company does in the back end and security and safety. And oh my gosh, it's just every day that goes by, you get another story about them just being complete, you know, failures on this mark. And, you know, it's funny. I mean, like, I maybe I'm wrong. I highly doubt it. But maybe I'm wrong about the idea that the reason why Facebook won in the long run was because they are a highly skilled engineering outfit, and that's what they cared about most, was well-engineered products, first and foremost. And they always have. And, you know, and that's why they took off. That's why they beat everybody else. That's why they are who they are. And that's where their sustainability comes from. Whereas other companies who cared more about the one product that they had and didn't really care about how strong it was on the back end, like, I don't know, MySpace, the reason why they got a lot of popularity is because it was a good idea, but the reason why they lost is because it was poorly executed. And Snapchat, I really think, is just poor execution again and again and again. And they buy it, you know, they pay these people, they get some really smart people working for them, and the more money they get, the higher this like likelihood of success goes up, because they get these really smart people working for them who are better at security, who are better at this sort of thing. But I think I keep looking at, just, man, the dude in charge, I can't remember his name and I don't even want to know it, he's just, they set these precedences in the way that they do things. They're just not well executed on what they're trying to do. They're constantly playing catch up and patching holes, and you know, and their intent is so nefarious. It's you know, they are an aggregator of content in order to content that you know, they're basically doing what Google is doing, but without any of the transparency that Google offers, which is ironic considering the fact that Google offers basically none. You know, they're just, I don't know. They've always given me an oogie feeling, and on top of it, they, you know, I don't know. So the fewer Snapchats I get from, I like getting Snapchats because it's a cool idea. Like, I'll come back. It's a brilliant idea. I like getting Snapchats. I like seeing what my friends are up to in the platform, the way that it's delivered. But I hate the fact that the company's succeeding with such just a miserable track record of how they treat people, how they treat their data, how they treat everything they do. They're just... And I think slowly they're going to find that they have a particular limit, and then something else fun and cool and culturally relevant will come along, and they will, you know, and will attack them. What's the word we used to use? Laterally attack the.
I don't know what word you're looking for.
It was one of those like business phrases. And that we talked about, man, it was years ago, back when we were talking about pivot. We got to pivot, or we got to, we got to use your synergies, is the classic one. But, you know, it was a lateral, you know, a company will come at them laterally. They won't try to attack them head on. They'll come at the service culture. They'll come at a culturally relevant service from a different direction. And it's just going to wipe Snapchat off the face of the planet. Like,
yeah, slingshot, look out.
Right. No, but it's sort of like what's going on at Rovio right now. Like, you know, you got this big company that had a good idea. Yeah, I know. And they had one great idea, and they executed it as long as they could, but they couldn't turn it into something sustainable and big. And I think that's what's going to happen with Snapchat.
I'm trying to figure out why they hired so many people, because Rovio is what I'm thinking of. I mean, like, didn't they know that they made a game?
Mm-hmm.
And that is just doesn't last forever.
Well, it's sort of like what was the one that did Farmville?
Zynga.
You know, Zynga did the same thing, because what they do is they go,
yeah, which are the same results. Come on.
Well, the idea is, and it's not a terrible idea, was you create one great game, and you know that the game has a shelf life, and so what you do is you hire a bunch of people to start churning out games, and then you buy successful games that they come up. They basically were trying to do the Google Facebook model of, you become the giant overlord. You're like EA. You become this massive conglomerate of games, and as games, you know, as these other studios start to come up, you buy the games, and they become part of your IP portfolio. The problem is that there is just way, way, way too much competition in the market, and they weren't coming up with enough, like, they didn't come up with any other winners. And, you know, it's funny, I actually bought, I think it was Star Wars, you know, this space version of, I was a pretty big Angry Birds fan, I'll be honest. I liked Angry Birds. I played it a lot. And when they came out with Angry Birds Space, I was super excited. And they had like 5 levels when the game first launched. I was like, what is this garbage? Like, it was ridiculous. And I was like, I paid for my, you know, like, I didn't want any ads. Like, I was a good revenue stream for those guys. And I know if it's funny, they came out with more levels later on, but I never played them because I was just like, this is stupid. I don't, you know, and that was a long time ago, and they continued to kind of truck along, but yeah, you know, they wanted to become something bigger. They wanted to have a bunch of games in their portfolio, a bunch of IP, and it just never took, you man. They never hit another big winner. I think part of the problem is that they, you know, they kind of wanted to, they believed that the gaming industry for mobile games is all about, you know, your small little couple of teams come up with a cool independent style game and you make a lot of money doing it. But I think the reality of it is the future of that market is actually bigger, higher performance, you know, more bigger budget casual gaming type games. And they didn't do that. They never built those. They wanted another, you know, they wanted another game that would cost a couple $1,000s to make in man hours and would turn into a $1 billion, you know, project.
Yeah, we all want that.
Yeah, and it's like you struck gold. Like, cool. Just don't, you know, the next one is going to be harder. And the next one after that is going to become harder and harder too until you become EA and you just completely take over everything and, you know.
No, never did that. Just a shame. Back to the to Snapchat. Right. There was a good commenter here. The very first comment says, "Hey, there's some good tips here. I don't think most people realize how important your diet is if you're trying to lose fat. You can spend countless hours in the gym, but if you're following the wrong diet, you won't see the results." Then it has a link. It says, "I hope that helps some of you here at..." another link.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I'm just like, classic. Oh, I love the internet.
Yeah. that's awesome. That is really funny.
Yeah, but no, I'm with you on Snapchat. It's one of those, honestly, when I got my new phone, I reinstalled all the apps from the start. Didn't reinstall Slingshot, or a few others. I did install Snapchat because our dad uses it, and and so I was like, oh, fine, I'll keep it installed for him. But otherwise, I would not have.
Yeah.
I got rid of Secret on my phone. I'm just like, or I should say, I didn't get rid of it. I didn't reinstall it.
Yeah, that counts.
Kind of had,
well, who uses,
past its useful life.
Who uses Secret? I mean, it was.
I don't know. It's a secret.
I see what you did there.
yeah. Well, I found it was most of it horribly depressing.
Yeah.
Just like, I don't need that. Or highly inappropriate.
Yeah, and the worst part about it is most of it is highly unlikely. You know, people lie on the internet, especially when anonymity is involved. And I just,
yeah,
what? Oh, it's happening. This is not good. Sorry, I just got distracted by a news item. Jim Harbaugh, reports say San Francisco 49ers coach will not return next season. The team's really denying it, but that's been the rumor for a while now, man.
What's he going to go do? Go coach at Michigan?
Probably. Man, he might be able to get paid better at a college. It's crazy how much money they make.
His brother said he's not going anywhere.
Well, that's because his brother wins.
49ers are winning.
Not enough. I'm wearing the Niners hat and I'm upset.
Well,
I'm angsty. I'm angsty about it, man. I want definitive victories every week. 60-3. That's it. They get 3 points. That's all they're allowed.
They won this week, right? Yeah, against the Chiefs.
Yeah, they did, but barely.
A win's a win, man.
Win's a win. You're right. Scoreboard. And anyways, this is completely off topic. Oh, what was I looking up? Do I still have Secret? I think I just... Oh, I do have Secret. But it's hidden deep inside of, like, the fourth page of one of my social folders.
Yeah, that's like why I even have that.
Exactly. I might go through and clear those out every once in a while. It hasn't happened yet, but...
Clearly you don't if you have fourth page social folder. But anyways, that's a different issue. So you dislike Snapchat. That's cool. Oh, so there's this new trailer out. Black Hat?
Yeah.
Have you seen the trailer? I've seen it. It's a Michael Mann movie? What do you think? Does it look interesting? It's a modern cyber hacker, you know, some hacker stealing all the money from the world or something like that. And so they release a hacker from prison to help catch this other hacker.
No, they release a god from Isengard to...
I look at him and was like, it was funny. My very first gut instinct, I went, oh, it's a Captain Kirk's dad from Star Trek. And then I went, no.
No.
I mean, it is, but that should not be my first reaction.
That's really funny. Yeah, seriously.
That's what I thought. Yeah, no, and he totally looks like him, which he should, because they're like, he just finished doing an Avengers movie, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And there's no way he's going to lose all the muscles and stuff. Well, it sounds like he's kind of a fighter.
Yeah, like, I don't physical. Know. I'm
he shoots guns and stuff.
I see. My problem with these kinds of movies always is that it's incredibly fascinating and enthralling to see what these guys do in order to win, but it tends to be highly technical, and Hollywood has decided that audiences are stupid, and they're right. And so they really dumb down these movies to like the lowest possible common denominator. It's kind of like the movie 21. I think it's one of the coolest mathematician stories ever out there. It's just so intriguing.
That's exactly what I was thinking about when you said it.
And they just dumbed it down until it didn't mean anything anymore. And it just drove me crazy. But everybody loved the movie. It was super well received. And made tons of money. So, you know, Hollywood's right. They're absolutely right. I'm wrong. And it pains me. And so a movie like this, I think, you know, it's going to be heavy on the muscles and guns and light on the interesting part.
That was one of the reasons why I liked Moneyball. They went a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
Than normal.
It kills me. I still haven't seen that movie.
Really?
I want to. People have told me the entire movie, and I feel like I've seen it, and it was really good.
So I got done with the movie. I watched it with Jesse, and when we were leaving it, I was like, that movie was awesome. I loved it. And Jesse was like, they just kind of talked about numbers and stats the whole time. I mean, sure, there was some baseball, but really?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, it was awesome. I loved it.
I know. And I think that's why I would like it, is because it wasn't a baseball movie. It was how do you build a successful enterprise, and, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it was about stats and culture and tradition and baseball. It's amazing.
Well, and what's crazy about it is, like, if you're really into baseball, that's what baseball is. It's a series of statistics.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's what makes it fun over the long term, you know, and you know, that's the irony of people not liking that movie because there's no baseball in it. There's the Kevin Spacey movie where he pitches at like 55 years old or whatever. That's not interesting baseball.
Kevin Costner.
Whatever. I guess Kevin Spacey was the
he was in 21.
Yeah, that's right. anyways. Yeah, Kevin Costner pitching when he's like super old. That's not interesting baseball.
The Rookie?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good movie, but that's not interesting baseball. Interesting baseball is not about, you know, heart and courage in the battlefield. No. It's about statistics and RBIs and batting percentages. Anyways.
there's humor to the movie as well, which is good. I mean, then they showed in the preview, right, where he's talking to this one guy and he's like, you know, we're going to have you play first base, and he's like, but all I've ever played is catcher. He's like, don't worry, you'll pick it up. It's easy. And he points to his guy and goes, go ahead, tell him. He goes, it's incredibly hard.
That's awesome.
All right.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah,
so
it's a good movie. Okay, so you go see it in theaters? What do you think? Was the trailer enough to convince you?
Yeah, I'll probably check it out.
Maybe. All right. It's cool.
It seems interesting. But, all right. You know.
That's all I was looking for.
It's, we got... I might come back to that one story.
They should make that light purple. That's the color for maybe the very end. So Reddit's fundraising or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, man. They got like a bazillion dollars this week.
That's cool.
Millions of dollars.
Can I have some of that?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
That's actually why it's so exciting. They're going to start a cryptocurrency based on the value of their stock price.
Nice.
And they literally said they basically they're getting $50 million to to continue to be the front page of the internet. Reddit is like the most interesting thing out there. I hate the company in some degrees and just think it's so cool in others. Like I don't know. They're nuts. They're crazy. They have no idea what they're doing. At the same time, they're just like have this. This is what it is. They're trying to do something that can't possibly work, and they just are constantly outracing disaster. Just like it's shoestring budget, massive, servers keeping everything up and running, trying to balance like all these really weird social issues that come on. Like they want to be open to. Laissez-faire, any craziness goes, but they've got to be able to make money. And then they've got like it's such distributed user stuff, and they got all these it's sort of like everything is how did Barbosa put it? They're not rules, they're more guidelines. And yes. and it's just like and there's just so much like it's actually a big money-making thing for moderators and stuff because they get paid on the side to make sure the right content gets up there, but that's all like super illegal and would get you like banned from the site if anybody found out. So they got to keep that all on the DL. But sometimes like users will go on like these just like they will become internet detectives of a class that just makes the NSA blush and root out. It's like the whole deal with when Tesla was being banned and on different subreddits and stuff. Well, anyways, it's this fascinating website with all these crazy things going on, but they're working. Whatever they're doing, it's working. They're still they're getting tons of users. They're growing, and they're still growing and onwards and upwards. So they gotta by Silicon Valley standards, got nothing. Like who gets for how many users they have, how many page views they have, they got pennies. And which I think is kind of telling of the fact that there's like no real viable how are we going to monetize this site. Like part of the reason why it works is because it's not this we don't collect information on users entering into a giant ad revenue site. And so trying to figure out how to make money is difficult for them. And one of the things that they're doing, and they've got this crazy plan. Now, what they're going to do is they're going to say, hey, 10% of this money, and they got to buy off on all of the different investors, 10% of this $50 million, so $5 million, we are going to give back to the community as a cryptocurrency. And it'll be backed as Reddit stock. And so, what is Bitcoin? Well, it's a cryptocurrency, but it's thought of as more of like a, it's easiest to think of it as a stock that you can break into micro percentages of the original value. And so each Bitcoin is one stock in the company that they're slowly adding more into it. And you're trading, you're using this value of the stock of Bitcoin to, backed as money for financial transactions. Well, the technical back end of how Bitcoin works is something that anybody can do, and including a doggy coin, like just crazy people, crazy cryptocurrencies, that are awesome. And Reddit's sitting there saying we have a stock of value, can we treat it like a cryptocurrency and see what happens with it? And people are like, well, how are people going to get paid? Like, what does this all look like? What are you guys talking about? This is craziness. And they're like, well, okay, hey, we're not exactly sure. Like, we kind of got like a broad outline of this whole idea. And like, obviously, one of the big things that they've clearly stated is that this thing is not going to be used for, like, you're not going to get Reddit coin every time your post hits the front page. It's not how it's going to work. It's not going to be paid for content, because you know, it's really supposed to be this merit-based thing, and it's not, you know, it's supposed to be apart from money. That's the purity of the Reddit algorithm. But they're, you know, but at the same time, it's like, you know, yeah, it's the, who gets paid for what and what kind of content and stuff. So it's interesting that they're, you know, that, and it'll be interesting to see how they kind of go about that. But the intention is, you know, $5 million of it is going to be going into it. And then it becomes a cryptocurrency, right? They're going to be tracking it and keeping track of it, and you'll be able to spend money on things with it. It's supposed to be worth money. So they basically are sitting here saying, hey, we got this giant crazy plan. Like, we got an idea and we're going to try to make it big. And you know, it'll be really, really, I think the future of Reddit over the next couple of years could be just incredibly fascinating if they pivot and become something different than they are, you know, backed by the same principles and company, you know, company type of company they are. Oh, it's craziness. It's craziness. It's cool. It's exciting. But they're not. And I think my favorite part about this whole thing is they're not very open about the details. And I don't think that's because they're trying to keep the powder dry and make sure nobody knows what's going on. It's because I think they actually don't have many details. They got like a crazy plan. They got all the investors to buy off on the crazy plan, but no actual details. So we'll see what happens.
Interesting, I think.
Yeah.
I have not gotten into Reddit.
Yeah, you don't need to.
I think I have an account officially.
Oh, yeah?
I feel like I do.
So one of the I have my cake day coming up, which is your anniversary of when you started, yeah. And you know what my cake day is? October.
The day Dig died.
It's October 18th.
It's a good day.
Yeah, I'm just kind of wondering why I was joining Reddit instead of, you know, celebrating your birthday. I'm not exactly sure what I was doing. I hope you don't feel bad. But every year, it's how I celebrate.
I do. I've got an account. Let's see. What do I follow? How do you know when your cake day is?
You go to reddit.com/u/your username.
Whoa. Slow down there, Tejas. Okay. /u or user?
Doesn't matter.
Okay. I'm here. I know it. I'm in the 1 year club. I've got one link karma. Is that good?
No. You kind of get one just for existing.
Yeah, that's part of my trophy case. That's my one trophy. Okay, what do I do? Okay, so I'm here. Where does it say my birthday?
If you click hover over Reddit for 3 years, you hover over something or other. I don't know.
Hover over something or other. See my name? Furlopro 27, by the way.
Furlopro 27.
It's not my name. What?
Wow.
I felt like there was a need for anonymity. And so you say, like, you don't do your real, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't do your normal username.
I don't do. That was commentary, like, right? On
what?
No.
Anyways, how do I know what I follow? I'm sure I follow some
even,
awesome
you go
subreddits.
Like, go to. You see, my problem is that you and I use a different interface because I use Reddit Enhanced Suite, which is an add-on for Chrome and all the different websites. It sort of gives you a different overlay, so a little more useful and stuff. So it's like highly customizable. So mine looks different than everybody else's. I have my subreddits up in the left-hand corner as a drop-down menu. Adult fans of Lego, Arduino, art, blog, data is beautiful, explain like I'm 5.
These can't be right. Advice-imals? Advice-animals?
Advice-animals? Oh my gosh. That's one of the best subreddits. It's super stupid, but I like it in a I-can't-stop sort of way.
apparently, well, I'm following Financial Independence, Pebble, Funny, Best of, AWW.
They got like pictures of like young pets being cute.
Atheism, apparently.
Yeah.
Today I learned technology, SimCity, which by the way turned like 25 this weekend.
Holy cow.
I know, right? That's what I'm following.
One of my favorite subreddits is R Wasted GIFs, which is just hilarious. It's basically pictures of people getting like just wrecked one way or another. But then they like at the very end they overlay the wasted from Grand Theft Auto as the person hits the ground. It's just it's awesome. I don't know why. It's like there are these GIFs that have been on the internet for the last decade that I've seen 1,000 times and they stopped being funny so long ago. But for whatever reason, having a big old wasted at the end just makes it 1,000,000 times funnier all over again. It's great. Especially when you don't see it coming. If they just hit like the front page and you don't realize, you just click on the links, not looking at what subreddit it is. And, like, you see somebody just get wrecked and all of a sudden there's a wasted and you're like, oh, I start rolling. I guffaw. It's awesome. Anyways, yeah, so if you want your money, James, you want to get your cut, you better get on the Reddit bandwagon. Get some karma. But anyways. So GE coming up with a pretty clever light solution, competing against the Philip Hughes, as it were, and other competitors out there. They basically come up with a super low cost smart light thing going on, it's kind of cool. They connect with the new Wink Smart Home Hub, developed by Quirky and launched in partnership with Home Depot, a long list of appliance manufacturers. And so as people are trying to come up with different cool solutions, this is one of the possible ones. GE, number one, the bulbs are like crazy affordable, like $20. But number two, they came up with one of the best commercials for it that I've seen in a long time. Do we have the ability to play any of that?
Yeah.
Go for it. Obviously,
You're gonna have to deal with reverb.
That's okay. Everything. We link all these articles. You can go to the website furloughbros.com. So if you want to see this video, just go and check it out. Jeff Goldblum's GE Link Spot. It's awesome. We'll show you. We'll play a short clip though.
Question: what does it take to live a life of fame on the big screen, the small screen, even the silk screen?
That's my face.
The answer may surprise you. Really great lighting. Have I benefited from exceptional lighting? You tell me. Now you can get successful guy lighting at normal guy prices. The GE Link light bulb lasts for over 22 years, and it only costs $14.97. That's 66 cents a year. I spend that on moist towelettes every 13 seconds. It's too moist. This bulb is also so easy to install, you can do it while painting. You simply twist in and turn on.
And he's painting.
Thanks
right
to
now.
A Wink hub that you plug into your wall socket, you can control your lighting.
I love you explains how it all works.
On your smartphone. For an embarrassingly small amount of money, you can kiss your arms. Non-successful life. Goodbye. But don't take my word for it. Ask this unremarkable nobody.
I used to hate to go home to a dark house and an unfamous non-celebrity husband. Now that I can control my lighting, I'm seeing things differently.
Whether you're working on your signature fragrance, improving your attack speeds in your home dojo.
I love his attack speeds. Those are nice.
Yeah. Setting a romantic mood in your music room. Which is also your hot tub room, you too can achieve perfect lighting.
Because
there's room for one more. Have your lighting servant get a GE Link light.
I love that that transition to his mouth.
What I typically tips people
it's,
for me.
It's definitely worth watching.
Better yet, get multiple bulbs. Have fun looking as good
get
as me.
Get multiple bulbs.
America.
That's my favorite part right there. Just America.
Yeah. Well, the best, and it's funny, I don't know, if, have you ever watched Tim and Eric's awesome show?
No, I don't think so.
It's weird, but it's like they're the creators of that commercial, and it's that was actually sort of like a more mainstream version of their sense of humor, but it's that kind of sense of humor. It's pretty funny, Tim and Eric, awesome show. Oh man, it's a well done commercial, and it's a case of brilliant advertising for a bulb. Kind of makes me feel stupid for spending as much as I did on my Hughes. Because that is a good deal, but whatever.
Embarrassingly, good deal. Yeah, I know. Good job, GE. Way to go on that one.
Yeah,
they're getting after it.
Yeah, man. I want to make sure Hugh doesn't run away with it. I don't blame him.
Smart.
Yeah.
Smart. So whoever adopts Apple Home or whatever it's called, HomeKit. That'll be the winner. So Pebble is getting a price cut.
Boom. How much?
Which apparently they said it's like $50 for one of them and $30 for the other. Makes it $100 for the watch, for the version that I have.
Nice.
Which they claim was not because of Apple.
So it has nothing to do with Apple. We promise.
It was there from the start. They had always been striving to make it affordable, and now it is more affordable than ever, putting them at $100 for my version and $200 for the Pebble Steel. And so that's what they're doing. They also have got some background activity trackers, such as your pedometer and your sleep tracker, which is kind of cool. Apparently I'll just get that for Frizzle. That really hurt. With an update, and we knew that it would be a road hard traveled for them. Their whole position, though, is they say, yeah, we're an entry-level smartwatch, and Apple's clearly going after the high-end, like Apple does, and Android just can't seem to figure it out. I thought he was not complimentary at all about the Android Wear platform, because he was like, it's essentially a smartphone on your watch. It's like, and that's a battery hog, and it's going to all sorts of issues, and they need to simplify and figure it out, like we have. So take that, guys.
Yeah.
So I thought it was interesting.
That is interesting.
Nice things to say about Apple, not so nice things to say about Android Wear, which I think they can, because clearly not competing with Android.
Yeah.
I mean, Apple, sorry. They're very much two different devices.
Or so they hope.
That's what they hope. Yep, that's what they hope. We'll see. I'll survive at least the first round of the Apple Watch.
At least. So I got one more thought that I want to throw out there, and it's kind of, I just keep rolling back around to this idea of music is great at selling everything but music. And I had another moment of just more evidence along this path. I went to a concert last Thursday. I had a crazy busy week. I'm so exhausted, I can't stand it. But I got to see Weezer live.
I saw that. Was that amazing?
Oh, it was weird.
Did you go like woohoo a whole bunch?
Oh, yeah. My throat is completely shot and has been for days. But one of the big things, so there were two bands there, the Congos and Weezer, and I'm a big fan of both bands. I know all the music and everything. And what was really interesting was that I went with a couple of our cousins, because it was one of our cousins. I was turning 21.
So interesting.
I know. And so a few of us went, and our cousin Timmy, Tyler turned 21. Timmy is,
happy birthday, Tyler.
Is the one that is my age, and we go and do things like go to Chico and go to Oktoberfest together. But he came along, and he had the reaction during the concert. He was like, wow, it's really crazy. Like, I know all of this music. He goes, it's weird because it's like music from when I was in high school. It's like my high school. It's like back in the day, and there's all these memories and everything. And I thought it was funny, because I was like, for me, it's not the music of high school. And even though we went to high school same exact time, listened to, you know, or, you know, did same exact culture and area and everything, I was just listening to a different type of music at the time. I was listening to classic rock and stuff because I'm super cool. And actually, I have a feeling I managed to make it seem really lame during high school, even though it should have been super cool. But I didn't. That's just how, it's sort of how I rolled back in the day. And anyways, it wasn't until I was in college and I decided they came out with the Red Album, and at the time I downloaded the Red Album and a bunch of the rest of their albums, and I borrowed them from the internet. But for the sake of this story, I think it's important to mention the fact that, to be explicit about the fact that I illegally downloaded these songs, I pirated them. And
okay.
And one of the interesting notes that has always been made an argument about pirates is that people who are most responsible for pirates, there's a direct relationship between the amount of pirating people do and the amount of money they spend on music. The more people pirate, the more they tend to spend on music, because they care about music is what the argument is. And so especially going to concerts, buying merchandise, doing all the things that music sells, that's not music. You know, they're not directly paying for music, they're going to concerts. And Weezer's a perfect example of where it sort of breaks down. They have a huge library of music. They've got a bunch of different albums and special tracks and all sorts of stuff. You could literally spend like $150 just on music by Weezer today if you wanted to buy all their music. Or you could go and spend $150 on the concert. And what happens is people just don't tend to do that. And I wasn't going to. I just, for whatever reason, especially at that time during college, I didn't have the money. But I downloaded all their music, I learned all their music, and I really liked all their music. And so years later, turned out, well, it's time for the concert. We knew it was coming up a couple months ago, and so I busted out Spotify. I've got the free version that I use just on my computer, and I listened to the rest of like all of their new stuff and like re-fell in love with it all. And so when we were in the concert, like, I knew all the lyrics. I know all the lyrics to all their songs because I just have been listening to Weezer a ton for so long. And what I think is really, you know, I realized for me and for me, a service like Spotify is important. The ability to go and really dive into a deep, like, the deep catalog of a band helps me really get into a band, and it really helps the band too, because I go with friends, we spend a lot of money on tickets, and we go and buy t-shirts, and we go and do stupid stuff like that, you know. And on the same token, there's bands like the Congos, who I think are great, and, you know, from a music discovery perspective, they're pretty new, and I like to wear the badge of honor that I learned about them a long time ago. And I actually don't remember how I learned about them, but I know for certain that they first started popping up amongst my friends on services like Spotify and, you know, and Pandora, sort of these music curation discovery services and stuff. And these are really important as, like, in the future of music. And the big thing here is that this acknowledgement of the fact that this mode of making money selling music is not the future. And I'm becoming more and more convinced of this as time goes on. And I actually finally decided to subscribe to Spotify because I use it a ton, and I don't really care about commercials, but I do care about being able to use it on my iPhone while I go places, and it's $10 a month. It's like, I can afford this. I'll cancel some other service, and the first month's free, so I'm giving it.
Will you really?
Yeah, I actually will. I know exactly which one I'm going to cancel, but my thing is, like, with Weezer, or with this whole deal, I think I'm positive that Apple's going to come out with, you know, when Beats Music finally becomes whatever it is Apple wants it to be, it's going to crush their iTunes sales. They just have to, let that go. You know, there's still a place for being able to buy a full license of the song where you can download it and keep the song legally. There is a place for that, but I think that's going away. I think Apple knows it, and they're just trying to come up with the best strategy. I read a rumor that right now they're trying to negotiate better prices on this sort of thing than Spotify could ever come up with. But I think there's a really compelling argument for coming up with a basically free music service that competes directly with Spotify that only works on your iPhones. And That's the sort of thing that would sell me an iPhone.
That would sell a lot of iPhones.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it goes back to, you know, it was sort of an Apple thing. And, you know, the innovator's dilemma, they got a cash cow with iTunes. But if they let another competitor like Spotify finally be the one who breaks
Square.
That, yeah. Exactly. Or, you know, and they, if they're finally, if Spotify gets Garth Brooks before iTunes does in this sort of a streaming thing, you know, it could mean that stream of revenue, yeah, they maximized how long they could have it for, but it goes away. And the worst thing that would happen to them, I think, is for the music thing to be taken out of the equation. Because right now, having an iTunes library locks you into having an iPhone, more or less. Even though it's portable, it's a little bit difficult. So it keeps people on the iPhone because that's where their music is. It's easy. And, you know, Spotify makes music portability huge. That's the other thing. I'm getting ready to buy my Android phone pretty soon here. As soon as it's available anywhere, I'm going to get it. And another part of this is I want music while I'm there. You know, I actually got Spotify for the Windows phone and was playing around with it because, you know, I listen to a lot of music and I want to be able to have that music with me. And so it's, you know, Spotify offers portability in music, and that's dangerous to Apple and the long-term survival of their various platforms. You know, having things that lock you in is valuable to them. And, you know, I think they have to do it. I think they know it. And I think it's just a matter of when. And I'm willing to throw down the gauntlet mid to early 2015.
Okay. Big risk there. Big risk.
On my part or their part?
What if that's part of the October announcement?
It's not.
No, you don't think it'll happen that fast?
No. That's iPad and iMac. That is when our other prediction is going to be made come to full fruition, which is the Retina
IMAX.
Yeah, I know. Which I'm super excited for. We called that. I'm like, you know, a little bit of patting myself on the back right at the end of the show. We called that so hardcore. Nobody was even rumoring that. Like for 6 months was the first time anybody even rumored that might be happening this year. And we called it December. It's happening this year. It's obvious. That's the roadmap. I feel so good about that.
Didn't call it a golden iPad. But
well, you know. Are you sure we didn't? We might have.
I don't know.
It seems like gold. The sort of thing we would have talked about.
I love gold.
Gold is best.
Yes. Cool. I feel like I had... No, we're not going to talk about my story. That's not a quickie. And it's already... Wow, we're like...
Yeah, man, I'm ready to...
Holy cow.
That's why I said my last...
All right, man. Yeah, good call. I wasn't watching the clock. Cool. Good show. Holy cow. Got laid fast. So... I'm all discombobulated. This is my part of it. That happened too quickly. I wasn't emotionally ready for us to stop, but I'll get there pretty quickly. Good show, man. Good show.
Yeah, definitely. You too.
So, everybody, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow. My brother is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time.